Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is returning VIP, Major Jess McDonald. Hi, Jess.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy to have you back on the show. Now, some of you listening out there may wonder, what's Rob talking about? We haven't had Jess McDonald on the show before. We have. She was on last year under the pseudonym Captain Universe, which is a hell of a handle, Jess.
I'm
a little sorry that you've dropped it, but you're just back on as regular old Jess McDonald.
Yes, I am.
Okay, excellent. I'm happy to have you back on the show. We had a great time talking last time. So now we're back here for season four. We're talking about episode 14, Mail Call Again. The original air date was December 9th, 1975. Before we get to the show, this particular episode, though, Jess, I want to ask you, since you were on last season, season three, which is, of course, the Henry Trapper years, where are you generally on this era of MASH, the sort of B.J. Potter, Frank Burns sort of midpoint of MASH before we move on to the Winchester years?
So it took me a second to warm up to Potter and Honeycutt, but the second that I did, I never looked back. I really do love them very much.
Okay. All right. So yeah. When you talked about watching the show with your dad as a kid, did he have a preference for what characters or what era of MASH that he liked?
I think he likes BJ. No, I know he likes BJ better because he aligns with him more morally. So he likes that about him.
Hey, that's great. Yeah. Great to have a dad who morally aligned with BJ Honeycutt. That's pretty good.
Definitely.
Excellent. All right. Very cool. All right. So let's get right to the episode. It was written by the always dynamic team of Jim Fritzell and Everett Greenbaum and directed by George Tyne. So it's Mail Call Again at the 477th, bringing with it all kinds of news. Colonel Potter gets a letter from his son telling him that he will soon be a grandfather. Potter is so delighted that he goes along with Radar's idea of having a baby pool where people will guess when the baby will be born. Margaret gets a new nightie from Fredericks of Hollywood, which she figures ought to drive Frank crazy. But Frank gets a letter from his wife, which Radar accidentally reads, saying she wants a divorce. Someone who was at the unit came back home and told Mrs. Burns about Frank's and Margaret's relationship. Colonel Potter has Radar call back home, trying to get news about his impending grandchild. But Frank asks to interrupt so he can talk to his wife. Potter agrees, and Frank calls his wife, being as oily and insincere as possible. He professes his love to his wife while insulting Margaret's looks, which she overhears, sneaks in a question about making sure that he hasn't been removed from his father-in-law's will. Unbelievably, it works, at least until Margaret, enraged, nearly takes Frank's head off for his nasty comments regarding her looks. Later, Hawkeye, BJ, Colonel Potter, Klinger, Father McKay, and Radar watch some home movies that Radar's family sent him of life back in Iowa. We see Radar's mother, played by Gary Berghoff himself in drag, plus his Uncle Ed and some of the other family members. At the end, Radar's mother mouths, "I love you, Walter," to the camera, nearly causing everyone watching to break out in tears. The moment is interrupted by a call from Potter's son, telling him he now has a granddaughter. Later, we see the doctors throw a party in the swamp, celebrating. All right, Jess, Mail Call Again. This is obviously the whole mail call format was something that the show used throughout its run. They would do this for Winchester as well. It's a great all-purpose, a bunch of storylines. You don't have to have one thread that can fill a whole episode. You can just run it through. Obviously, getting mail at the 477th is a big deal. So overall, we're going to go through it scene by scene. But overall, what are your impressions of this episode?
I just really like the bittersweet nature of it. It really captures a human essence to war, which I know the show does a great job of doing all the time, but it's in so much more of a distilled way to me, and I really, really like that about it.
Yeah, it's reviewing this episode. It's kind of funny. The mail call shows to me kind of blend in my mind a little bit. I mean, obviously ones involving, you know, Trapper or Henry, you can discern when it is. When I was going through this episode again, I was like, what were the plot lines of this one? And then I watched it over again and I was like, oh man, I love this episode. This is so fun.
Yeah.
It's so warm-hearted. It features, to me, some of the most revealing moments of Frank Burns possible in a bad way. But this is just so, such a, all the storylines to me are really interesting. The idea that Colonel Potter, is of course waiting to hear if he's a grandparent, and the frustration. I mean, we all live in a world now of instant communication, and even, you know, good Lord, somebody gives you that three dot thing at when you're getting a text and you're like, come on already, you know, we can't wait 5 seconds to get a response. And in this time, you might not know for what, months that you, until you became a grandparent. I mean, it's inhuman. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And this is what everybody had to deal with. So the opening scene, we've got in Potter's tent. He's singing to a song as he's shaving. I love the mention early on where he says that he's got a cold, which I thought was a nice detail. First of all, I don't know how you'd notice with the way Harry Morgan talked.
Right.
It's such a nasally voice with that kind of, you know, sort of bad Harry Morgan impression. I apologize, everybody. But it reminded me of a, because the him mentioning having a cold does not play into the episode at all. There's no point where he's like sneezing or anything like that. And the thing I think about is I remembered years ago I was watching Mad Men on a DVD, I guess, and there was a commentary track by Matthew Weiner, the creator of the show. And there's an episode where Don Draper has a cold. And the reason they did it is because John Hamm happened to have a cold. And they were figuring how can we write around it. And then Matthew Weiner was like, why are we writing around it? People get colds. Like, we don't have to make it part of the episode. We'll just mention it. And I almost feel like that had to be what it was, that Harry Morgan had a cold. And they were like, let's just say he has a cold. I mean, people get colds. I mean, that's just the way it works.
Yeah, like a just in case he might sneeze or something and we'll just roll with it. Because yeah, it doesn't have to stop everything for someone to have a cold. It's normal.
Yeah, it's just a totally, especially in the cesspit of disease that is the 477. People getting sick all the time. So one thing that is worth mentioning is in that opening scene where he talks about that he's going to be a grandfather. Obviously, MASH could not, for the life of it, keep Colonel Potter's family consistent. Because this is, as far as I know, the only mention of Colonel Potter having a son.
Yes, I'm pretty sure you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, he talks about a daughter, because we meet his son-in-law, his oily son-in-law, played by Dennis Dugan. But they never mention the son again. And so it's like, I always, again, I've been saying this across the episodes, I know, I'm sure Harry Morgan had more to worry about than that. But you would think that wouldn't one of the writers go, wait, didn't we do an episode where he had a son? What do we, you know? But no, the son is just obliterated out of memory. So anyway, they do the baby pool. They decide to do the baby pool, which is a fun idea. And I love the whole bit about where he's and of course, Colonel Potter, being a military man, initially wants a son. He wants a grandson. He doesn't think about that. He wants a granddaughter. And we'll talk about that later on in the episode. But I love that he's describing the grandson that he wants, you know, and he's like, strapping and an aristocratic nose, but a little taller. And he's bothered by the fact that he's barely taller than Radar. I love that. That's something that obviously has bothered Colonel Potter throughout the years, that he's just not that tall.
And I like the subtle physical comedy that he uses in that part. The way he contorts his face to go with what he's saying is just my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's a great comedic performance by Harry Morgan. So then Radar goes to Margaret's tent. She gets the package, as I mentioned, from Fredericks of Hollywood. I had no idea that Fredericks of Hollywood went back that far. I didn't know that they were around in the 50s.
It's a very old establishment. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's closed now, but it was a very old establishment while it was still here.
Yeah, I had no clue that it was that it went back that far. So she gets the thing, and I love the bit where Radar comes in and he says, "We're having a baby pool," and of course Margaret is like, "I don't go in for gambling," and then she says, "Oh, it's for Colonel Potter's grandchild," and then she immediately rattles off her guests because it's like, oh, once Colonel Potter's approved it, it's okay to do. He's gotten, you know, and it's something that the show would mine. I mean, it's a little subtler, and maybe I'm reading into it, but that's part of the reason I'm here as a show, is to read into these things. Is Margaret so totally looks to Colonel Potter for approval, for benediction, for every, she just really looks up to him. And so if anyone else was having a baby pool, she would be against it. But if it's Colonel Potter's baby, therefore it's fine. And so she's totally okay with it. And I find that very sweet, that she's like, oh, it's Colonel Potter? Then if it's good enough for him, good enough for me. And then she rattles off the date, 6 pounds, boy, the 23rd or whatever it is. It's great.
Yeah, she really does. It is endearing that she likes Colonel Potter so much. And it is pretty obvious. I don't think you're reading too much into it at all.
Yeah, they would play up with that in later seasons. And I've always wondered, again, and maybe if I'm ever lucky enough to have Loretta Swit back on the show, I can ask her whether that was something that they just found from the actors and then wrote into it, or that was something they came into it later on. I don't know. But it really is a nice way of character development. As Frank Burns gets worse and worse, which he will in this episode, I like that Margaret is sort of kind of splitting off from him and finding that, she's got probably in her mind, she's got a real military leader finally running the 477, which is really sweet. So then Radar goes and he delivers the mail to Father Mulcahy, and he's talking about his sister. I love the mention of Our Lady of Perpetual Sorrows, which is like all these churches always have like the saddest names, Our Lady of Perpetual Sorrows. And we would hear a bunch of times about his sister, the basketball player, repeated stories about her wacky adventures back at home. She can dunk with a heavy crucifix and stuff like that. We find that she's a Father Mulcahy's sister. Sounds like a fun lady. So then we can continue on with Radar, and he goes to the swamp. We get our one and only mention of Waggle Honeycutt, the Honeycutt's dog.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's our one. We never hear about that they have a dog. First of all, great name for a dog, yes. Waggle. Marvelous name. And it just makes the Honeycutt sound even more perfect than they already are.
And I really like that the wife like sends the letters on Waggle's behalf. I think that's so cute. That's something my dad used to do in my lunchboxes. He would write notes either from pets or from characters from books we were reading. Aww. And like they would be in my lunchbox. So I just think that's the cutest thing.
Oh, but written as if they wrote them kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cute. What kind of children's books are you reading?
Oh yeah, like it was Dumbledore for a while. Sometimes I got them from Dobby the House Elf, I think Frodo wrote them for a little bit. It's just all the fantasy people I liked.
Oh my God, that's marvelous. Your dad just sounds awesome, Jess.
Yeah, he's super cool.
Yeah, that is great. All right, I don't want to get off this too far, but when he said in your lunch, did you have like a lunchbox or?
Yeah, I had like a full standard lunchbox. Yep.
What was on it? Was it like a character lunchbox?
I had a Beatles lunchbox for a long time. It was a proper lunch pail. Yeah.
That's great. I wish, it occurs to me, I'm sitting here, to my left is the Charlie's Angels lunchbox that my fiance had as a kid, and I bought it for her off of eBay. The first thing I ever bought her, first present I ever bought her, was the Charlie's Angels. She showed me a picture of her from the 70s holding a Charlie's Angels lunchbox, and I just went to eBay and bought it for her.
That was so sweet.
It makes me so sad there was never a MASH lunchbox. They really should have been. They should have done that. I would have had that. I would have loved that. That would have been great. So, okay, anyway, we'll get off our discussion of lunchboxes. So Hawkeye in the mail gets a paper from home. He gets the Crabapple Cove Courier, and this begins a whole run of Hawkeye reading incredibly boring stories from his hometown paper. And it starts this whole thing where every story that Alan Alda / Hawkeye reads from the paper feels ad-libbed. I know that it probably wasn't, because as far as I know from what Larry Gelbart ever said about MASH, that it was not ad-libbed. But did you get that read from it too? Just the way he sort of stutters and like reads over himself, and they feel like he's making them up as he's going along.
Yeah, it did feel like he was trying to cover for a fumble. You know, like he had tripped up on a couple words, and he was like, I'm gonna roll with it so we can just finish the take.
It's absolutely the way it is. And again, it maybe just be a tribute to Alan Alda's performance that he can make it sound so natural. It just sounds so perfect. So then we find out that there's a letter from Mrs. Burns, and we see that it's already open. And I love it. Hawkeye and BJ immediately go in for the gossip, and he's like, oh yeah, the letter fell open, and I was boiling some tea for Colonel Potter, and it accidentally broke open. It's like, yeah, steam will do that. And you're not supposed to. That's a federal crime, by the way, but okay. Whatever.
But it's so great. I love he reminds me of the nosy housekeeper from White Christmas. I just love it so much.
Yeah, now you're speaking my language. It's one of my all-time favorite movies, Jess. So
same here.
Oh, it's perfect. Oh, my goodness. So we find out that somebody that traveled through the 477th ends up going over back home and spills the beans to Mrs. Burns. when I watch this scene, my initial reaction is, okay, somebody, presumably maybe a wounded, but maybe not, somebody came through the 477th, got wind of their relationship, and told Mrs. Burns. Okay. I think to myself, how obvious were Burns and Hot Lips that a guy just passing through would find out about that? You know what I mean?
He absolutely deserves it just for how like brazen they must have been.
Exactly. I am reading way into the show, and because again, that's why I'm here. But I think about okay, there's a guy through the unit who presumably knows Mrs. Burns, which means he knows Frank in some respect. You would think Frank would know for the week that this guy is here. I'll just kind of keep it quiet.
Yeah, just be on your best behavior. It shouldn't be that difficult.
Now maybe somebody else told the guy. Maybe somebody else was like, oh yeah, hey, you know, this guy's fooling around with Major Hula. You never know. But it does feel like, yeah, you know, you would just know, maybe I'll just be cool about this. But okay, whatever, that's fine. So, I love how much Hawkeye and BJ encourage Radar's bad behavior.
It's the best.
I love it. He's like, I'm no spy. Radar, it's okay to be an American spy. Yeah, Americans can do anything rotten. I love that. they're totally... You should not be doing that, guys, but they're doing it because they know Radar is desperate to spill the beans. So then Frank shows up and he insults them, and you know, he insults Radar, and he says, you know, you guys got to get out of here. And then he reads the letter and of course doesn't deal with it very well, and that he decides to shred the pillow and sends feathers flying in all directions. And I love the weird reaction after he destroys the pillow and all the feathers go flying, and you see Hawkeye just kind of watching the feathers. At one point, he kind of shushes his body out of the way so the feathers won't land on him, which I don't really understand. I think it's just supposed to be a funny bit of business. So anyway, after we find out that Burns is in trouble with his wife, Margaret runs into him on the compound, and she talks about her nightie, and she says it's the naughtiest thing, and Burns has no interest in that. And she says, oh my God, did somebody die? And he says, oh no, it was only so unimportant. And that's our big act break. And then we're back in Radar's office, and he's trying to communicate, get a call in to the States to find out about Colonel Potter's grandchild. And it leads to a marvelous scene where Burns says, did my call go through? And Radar says, not yet. I have another call first. And he says, don't give me any of your snottiest. I'm not that old dimwit you work for. Not realizing that Colonel Potter is standing off to the background. And man, I love Gary Berghoff's reaction.
It's just fantastic.
He's just like, you are in so much trouble. I love that so much. And then, of course, Colonel Potter is as nice as he can be, where he says, the Ohio calls mine, Major. And he says, I'd knock off that dimwit talk. Your bowl's been out since I met you, which is absolutely fantastic.
That's a great rebuttal. It really is.
Again, makes Colonel Potter the nicest boss you'll ever have, because... He lets Burns kind of get away with it. He just kind of says, knock it off, Burns. And that's the end of it, as opposed to he really could re-burn the riot act, but he doesn't. He just kind of lets it go. Burns is whining about getting a phone call in. And then we see that the Potter is trying to get a call in, and they realize they can't really quite track down where his daughter is giving birth. So then Burns goes in and he tells Potter what the big deal is about. It's my wife, sir. And he says, she wants a divorce. And my wife's very upset. And he says, oh, that's rough. And then he says, I love Potter with the deal, the line where he says, does she got another stallion in the paddock? Which is very Colonel Potterism. Heaven forbid, she worships the ground I walk on. Who told you that? My mother. And when he says that, Potter rears his head back like a full half foot. Like, what is wrong with this guy?
The face is just perfect, because that is how I always feel about Frank.
Just like, what? What? what are you talking about? Oh, my God. So we find that in post-op, Hawkeye is boring some of the patients with more stories from his newspaper. And then going back to the thing about where I feel like this is ad-libbed, he starts talking about a burglary in the Crabapple Cove. And he says, and he lost a collection of her shavings mugs, which is clearly not right. And then he catches up and he's like, shavings mug? Shavings mug, shaving mugs, shaving. No, that's not right. And that's got to be an ad lib, right?
Because he's messing it up. I think that one has to be. I don't think that there's like the first ad lib. Maybe it wasn't, but this one, like, it has to be.
I mean, because he's clearly reading it. So it's right. Like, what does it say then? I'm like, what is shavings mug? Shaving mugs, shavings mugs. No, that's not right. I love the idea that you would pluralize shaving mugs as shavings mug, as if it's like attorneys general or something. Yeah. Like that. Complete utter nonsense. It's just great. And I don't know whether they directed the actor, but the actor is just staring straight ahead and just looks completely uninterested in what Hawkeye is saying. He just doesn't care at all. So then we find out that they have a tough time getting a line through because Syngman Rhee's been elected dictator again. And then we get our first appearance from Klinger in what is probably my all-time favorite Klinger scam.
Yes.
Where he comes in his black outfit with a veil. Which, where does he get all this stuff? Where does he have all this stuff? And he has this marvelous story about his two brothers killed in an explosion at the Toledo Harmonica Company. Which is wonderful. I love the idea that there's enough harmonicas that need to be made that there's a whole factory that just produces them in Toledo, which is marvelous. But this performance by Jamie Farr is top flight comedy because he is so overdoing it. And I love that Potter kind of initially goes along with it, where he's like, two brothers. That's right. That's rough. Older brothers. And Klinger's like, I was the baby. Hakeem would bathe me. Maurice would nurse me. And at that moment, you see Potter reach in to his folder. Because then you think in that moment, he's starting to say, this isn't – something's not right here. He figures it out. And then, of course, Klinger tips his hand with the whole – he gets into the whole, through the selected service, I'm entitled to an immediate discharge from this Army, from this United States of America Army. While you process it, I'll pack. And even does a salute. Which is like, he can't even wait long enough for the scam to really play out. He's got to force his hand.
I mean, that's his whole thing. Every time he fails, it's because he rushes the end and he's like, okay, so send me home now. And it's like, if you just let people sit with the answer, they might actually get there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, clear. Just be a little more patient and this scam might work. But he cannot do it. And then I love when Potter says, yo, and he calls him Sherm. He says, yes, Sherm. And Potter's like, Sherm, I was overcome by a wave of civilianism. And in other words, first of all, this is in your handwriting. And I translated it from my mother's letter, sir. It was in Lebanese. Let me see it. I burned it. Mm-hmm. It's part of the religious ceremony held when two brothers die in a harmonica factory or a camel race, whatever. He can't be bothered. He didn't even bother to like write the whole scam out. It's just... oh my God, it's great.
It's so half-baked, but the costuming is so on point.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, it's absolutely great. So then, and he goes through your personal record. He says, you have no brothers. Whoever said that was lying. You said that. Right, I was lying, sir. And then he immediately changes the story that they were in the country illegally and they lived under the floorboards and they fed them through the cracks. It's just the most pathetic sob story imaginable.
Oh, it's just awful.
Just watching these two play this out is just so great. I mean, they're just totally in each other's rhythm. And then Potter finally says, you made all this up. Huh? And then Klinger, of course, drops it. How can you tell? Every time you tell a lie, your nose gets smaller. Right. And then the perfect button is when he says dismissed. And Klinger almost threateningly is like, I'll be back. And Potter just says, I'll be here. And he just has that glint in his eye. And it's just, man, I feel like with scenes like this, I could watch these two do this all day.
Oh, they play off each other so well. Their chemistry is just, it's beautiful.
Oh, man. It's Klinger is just so, like what you said, he just can't even wait long enough for the scam to work.
No. But at the same time, Potter always lets, like, just kind of lets it boil over. Like, he just sits there and watches as it all falls apart and just adds in little things of fact in there. And I just love the way he does it.
Yeah. Oh, man. It is my favorite of all Klinger's walking into the office and trying to fool the CO scams. It is my favorite one because it is just, he's so committed to it. He's got the black dress and the veil. He's weeping uncontrollably. And just the way that he can shift the story from the two brothers to being, you know, I was the baby. They would bathe me and nurse me. And then we fed them through the cracks. And you're just like, what are you talking about? So back at the mess tent, Hawkeye is continuing to read his stories. He talks about there was a robbery involving a band of roving transvestites, which I have to think is where I don't think you really heard a lot about transvestites in 1970s broadcast television.
No, that was probably not super publicized, I don't think.
No. Now, you could argue it's maybe a little, it's not the most nice reference in the world because it's sort of regarding them as like a band of like roving criminals, but I didn't take it too terribly seriously. It's more just, it's so much more in the culture now that to see it on a 1975 television show, you're really like, wow, they were really kind of ahead of the curve here on that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I even think the cross-dressing with Klinger and the way that he's treated by others is way ahead of the curve. I really think like that, you don't expect that from a television show then, because they're not even that kind now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So then we have this bit where Klinger comes in and he just finished digging a latrine hole, and they get Louise on the phone. Frank runs in and begs Potter to use his office so he can have this private conversation. And then we see Frank talking to his wife, desperately trying to make sure that this story doesn't gain ground about that he's with Margaret, and Margaret overhears it. And, you know, we've been saying this across all season four. It's always hard to get a bead on Frank, whether he is genuinely evil. Is he just stupid? Is he just, you know, I mean, it seems to toggle back and forth. But this moment where he has this story, where he is talking to his wife and he's calling her honey sugar, and he's lying through his teeth about Margaret Houlihan. He refers to her as an old war horse. This is really Frank, in a lot of ways, at his most evil. Although previous episodes, he's shown some astonishing racism, which is very bad. But there's this moment here where he is begging his wife, and he's pleading with her, and he starts to cry, and you feel like he's being genuine. And then when he realizes he has that line about, am I still in your father's will? And clearly it works. Unlike Klinger's scam, Frank's scam works. And then the minute he gets off the phone, he lets loose with that little.
That is so unsettling. It went directly under my skin like that. Oh, gosh.
It really is like, okay, Frank does know what he's doing.
Yeah, it's probably his slimiest act. Like it's just the most gross thing he does. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's him being purposefully misleading, not even misleading. That's too gentle. He's straight up lying to his wife just to make sure he continues to get her money. And he knows what he's doing. And the minute he thinks nobody's listening, he reverts to who he really is, which is that evil laugh. And it is really very chilling because he's clearly, if you watch just the phone call and you don't know what's coming, you're like, yeah, he's being deceptive, but he really doesn't want a divorce from his wife. But when he lets loose that evil cackle, you're just like, oh, this guy is the worst. He's just the worst. And then he comes out of Potter's office. And of course, Margaret has heard all of it. And she throws things at him, and she doesn't, of course, like being referred to as an army mule, which is understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Frank tries to stop her, and he even grabs her by the arm, and she says, unhand me or I'll zap you with my knee. You know, over the years of MASH, there's been jokes about assaulting Margaret. There's even one episode where we literally saw somebody try and do it. And it was played for laughs, and it's some of those things do not age very well. It comes from an older style of comedy. The reason I always find anything involving Frank and Margaret to be okay is because, you know, Margaret is in zero physical danger.
That's zero true.
From
that
Frank Bright. It's not acceptable. It's still not acceptable to do. But you know that if Frank ever got anywhere out of hand, Margaret would demolish him in 2 seconds.
And yeah, she could snap him in half with just her pinky nail. Like, it's fine.
he's just complete. There's no problem with that at all. And then, you know, he asks about, I'll get a can of Sterno and you can put on your new nightie. And she throws out the door. You put on my new nightie, and it lands on Burns. And he complains about how much money it costs. And of course, right at that moment, Hawkeye and BJ are walking by with their golf clubs, which is like almost like it's almost like an old style, like vaudeville comedy blackout thing where they walk into the frame just enough to make a joke. And then they walk out of the frame. It's like, you know, it's that kind of like old style comedy. And then back in Potter's office, we get, I'd say, which is the centerpiece of the episode, which is where they watch the home movies of Radars. And of course, we've seen this from a couple of different characters. Later on, we would see some BJ home movies. We've seen Frank's home movies. We've seen Henry's home movies. And now we're seeing Radar's home movies. And, you know, it's funny. On paper, the idea that you would get Gary Berghoff to play his own mother in drag, on paper, that seems like a horrendously bad idea, because this scene is going to end with a very serious moment. And you would think, well, that's going to undercut it. But, and I'm dying to know what you think about this. To me, it improbably works.
Oh, I thought it was unbelievably sweet. Like, I really love the moment. I don't think it spoils it at all, even though it is, of course, super funny when you see it first, like, oh, that's literally Radar. But it's nice. And I do like even that Father Mulcahy refers to that. You know, as soon as it's over, he's like, oh, wow, they look remarkably similar. Like, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that the show couldn't – I mean, it's drag. It's literal drag. And, of course, Klinger's been doing that throughout the years. But you would think that it wouldn't – that just would be too broad for this kind of thing. And yet, maybe there's something – the fact that we don't hear them because, of course, there's no audio – you know, it's a home movie, so it's silent. And maybe it's the fact that we just see everybody and it's in black and white, which gives it, you know, maybe like an extra level of kind of realism. Conversely, black and white seems more real in some weird way. But there's something about it and the way it's shot. Again, this episode was directed by George Tyne. We're going to get into him in a moment, but the way the home movie is shot, it feels real. It feels like a documentary where the camera work is kind of jumpy. It's clearly sort of handheld and it feels utterly real, even though a lot of Radar's relatives are very cartoony. We have his Uncle Dave, who does this comedy stuff with the corn cobs and all this kind of stuff. It's very broad and yet it really, really works. And part of it, I guess, is that we're seeing all these people eat, you know, delicious food and just being together as family members. And it's played for broad comedy, and yet it really works because maybe the reaction of the rest of the cast is that you're seeing how much they miss being home. And it's just, even though everybody's goofy and these people, for the most part, other than Potter, who comes from a presumably kind of rural part of where was he from? Nebraska, I think it was. They said he was from Missouri. He ends up being from Missouri. BJ is from California. Hawkeye's from Crabapple Cove, although that's a small town. And Father Mulcahy is from. I don't think they fully established where he was exactly from. He talked about Philadelphia at one point. But everybody just misses being home so bad that even though this is so broad, it's just incredibly sweet.
It is. And I really like the moment towards the end, which really sells it as a real home movie to me, when they're packing it all in because it starts to rain. And the moment when Radar as mom turns around and looks at the camera with this like tender look of, I just don't want to go yet because I just want to be with you. It sells it so perfectly. I wouldn't expect that from Gary Berghoff in drag, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. every time I watch it, you just feel like, that it can't work. This really shouldn't work. It's like, what is this, Monty Python? You know what I mean? And yet it really does. But I'm also slightly, that dog Ranger, we see Raider's dog Ranger, looks like a puppy version of our dog Pippa, who we just adopted a couple of months ago. So I'm a little biased in that it looks like my dog. But yeah, I love you mentioned that moment where Raider's mother kind of lifts her hand and then in like a wave and then puts it back down. Like you said, she's not quite ready to go. And then she clutches her chest a little because, yeah, it's going to rain. And then she says, I love you, Walter. And again, this is only the second time that we're hearing that that's Radar's name. We just found out a couple episodes ago in Quo Vadis, that is Radar's first name. And he starts to cry. And then the phone rings. And I love it that where Potter says, "Nice pictures, Radar." And you hear Radar just kind of mutter, "Thank you, sir." And he doesn't say it loud enough that Potter hears him. And then Potter goes, "Radar?" And I just love that moment that Radar is, he's usually so composed when he's in his sort of clerk duties. But in this moment, he's just so taken by that footage of seeing his mom that he kind of forgets himself for a moment. And Potter has to kind of be like, "Radar?" It's just really beautiful.
Yeah, it's very, very well done. And so much more than I expected. Every time I start to watch, I'm like, oh, wow, this actually hurt my feelings.
yeah. It's really heartbreaking. So then we get a phone call. Potter gets a phone call. I love the detail that they're in such a hurry to get Potter on the phone. They don't even turn the lights on because they've turned the lights off to watch the movie. And they just sit there in darkness, which is just a fun little detail that, like, that's – who cares? It doesn't matter. We can have the phone call in darkness. It doesn't matter. And Potter is trying to find out the name of his grandson. And he's like, Cheryl, my grandson's a girl. And then he just goes, oh, heck no, I'm not disappointed. Which is, again, Colonel Potter, perfect guy.
Oh, it's just wonderful.
He's just so sweet. And then he talks about he asks about his daughter-in-law. You give that soldier a big kiss. And then the phone cuts out, as it always did at the 477th. And everybody gets a little teary, even Hawkeye. Of course, he covers it by saying that he lost the baby pool. That's why he's crying. And we find out that Father Mulcahy, he won the baby pool. So, of course, you know, he always wins all the pools. I think in the football.
Yeah, he has all the best luck.
yeah. So that's the end of the main episode. And then we get a button on the show. And it features a giant close-up of Nurse Kelly smoking a cigar. And they're having a party to celebrate Colonel Potter's grandchild. And man, I love this scene. First of all, I love that Nurse Kelly gets something to do. She so rarely does. She doesn't get a line, but I love that it comes back in from commercial on her face. And we see the nurses, and they're all the only sort of referral to the Burns Margaret scene is when Klinger shows up in his nightie, and he's like, "Where did you find that?" He says, "I found it in the trash." And war is such a waste. And they end it with singing "Let Me Call You Sweetheart." And it's just such a great, warm way to end the show. Like, it makes you want to be at the 477th with these people.
Yeah, they made it so cozy and home-like right at the end. Like, it shows that they're kind of a ragtag family, you know?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's just such a, like, yeah, oh. I would hope that if I was at the 477th, I would be part of the in-group to be invited to the swamp like that. That was definitely what I would want. I would feel so bad if I was not invited to these things. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a really warm, sweet episode full of these sort of this little minor kind of like low-key storylines, but it all ties together, and it's just really sweet. And it's just another really marvelous season 4 episode. I just absolutely love it.
Same here. It's one of my favorites. It really is.
Yeah. So acting-wise, the only guest actor we really have is Billy Beck. He plays Uncle David. We don't actually hear him, again, because he's in the home movies. He died in 2011. He had a lot of great credits. He was in Mary Hartman. He was in films like Near Dark, Mystery Men, The Blob, Bachelor Party, The Best Man with Henry Fonda. I mean, man, that's a lot of great credits. Good for you, man. And then the director I wanted to mention is George Tyne. This was his first of 7 MASHes that he would go on to direct. He did a lot of TV. He passed away in 2008. He directed shows like Love Boat, Happy Days, The Odd Couple, Bob Newhart. And his other credit really worth mentioning is he directed the pilot, the only episode of The Fighting Nightingales, which was a sort of unofficial MASH spinoff about a nursing unit at the 8055th MASH. It only ran as a pilot. It was proposed as a series, didn't sell. The pilot aired as basically a special, and then it never aired again. It is completely unavailable. I have tried to find it. It's got Adrian Barbeau in it, which to me is just enough. It's enough of a reason to watch it is because I love Adrian Barbeau, but it's regarded on IMDb as a MASH spinoff, even though I can find no evidence that there's any overlap, that there was any reference or that it, that they were meant to exist in the same universe. But this pilot, unfortunately, is unavailable. I've never been able to find it anywhere. But this, that pilot was directed by George Tynes. So there is at least creatively some overlap between the two shows.
I didn't even know that that show existed. And now I'm very, very sad that I won't be able to find it. Because when you mentioned it, I was like, I know what I'm doing this afternoon, but sadly I won't be.
No, it's not on YouTube or anywhere. I mean, it must exist somewhere. Somewhere in some old, I guess it's Disney now owns it, somewhere in some film reel somewhere. And I'm gonna keep looking because it's gotta surface eventually. But I'm fascinated with what that might look like as this sort of unofficial MASH spinoff show. But unfortunately, as of this recording, The Fighting Nightingales is unavailable. So for this episode, Mail Call Again, Jess, do you have a particular favorite line or joke from the show?
My favorite joke is when Hawkeye says the bit to Radar about how it's okay to be a spy for the Americans. That little portion is my favorite. It makes me laugh so much.
It's okay to be an American spy. Good guys can do anything rotten.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's Hawkeye endorsing the exact endorsing the point, which is the exact opposite of what he really means.
Right, exactly.
That's marvelous. My favorite joke, and I purposely left it out of the scene description because it's so good, is during the Klinger Potter scam. And I love when it's clear to Potter that the two brothers did not exist. And he says, Klinger, you got to live before you die.
Yeah.
And Klinger, in the middle of his crying, goes, oh, you said a mouthful, sir? I laugh at that every single time, that he's just still trying to pull the scam. And I love that he's pretending to Potter that Potter is delivering some sort of wonderful observance of life. Oh, you said a mouthful, sir. Oh my God, I laugh so hard at that. I just do. It's just so darn funny. And God bless you, Jamie Farr. It's just so funny in this scene. Just so, so good. So it's just absolutely marvelous. Yeah, it's just a great episode. I think I've been saying it virtually every show this season, is that the reason I love season four is because they did their big swings really well. Quo Vadis, Captain Chandler, The Interview, Welcome to Korea. Their big swings were great, and their small swings were great. And this is a small swing. It's just a regular episode, but every storyline is absolutely marvelous. It's just a really, really funny show. So it's a great Mail Call Again. You can't beat it. So, well, Jess, thank you once again for coming back to talk MASH with me. You know, I always enjoy having you on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
I'm Mick Jess Sandwich on the socials. I have trouble spelling that one out loud, so hopefully you caught that. And then I'm on TikTok too. And then I have some old podcasts like Sympathetic Monsters is still out there.
All right. Absolutely. That's fantastic. So go find Jess over on the TikTok, kids. I'm too old to be on there, but you younger people can go there to TikTok and find that out. So, of course, if you were always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477cast, you can find back episodes of this show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. And if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Dolph DeVries, Britt Schramm, Mike Thomas, and Michael Porter for their support of MASHcast. I really do appreciate it. So we'll be back next week, but until then, that is all.
What are you doing here in officer's country?
Just delivering the mail, sir.
Well, then deliver and get lost, you little drip.
I was talking to the guys.
The guys? The guys? I am Major Burns. This is Captain Pierce. That is Captain Honeycutt. We are not guys.
I thought I was.